Welcome to Facing Fear with Sarah. My name is Sarah McInerney Hawk. I am your host. I went from 30 flirty and thriving to 30 flirty and surviving. I was diagnosed with breast cancer at age 30, and prior to that, I had faced a lot of fears in life, which led me to creating this podcast in 2019. Fast forward, here we are many years later, and I've interviewed over 100 different guests with many stories of how they face fear while remaining unapologetically authentic. That is what we are here to do, encourage you to live your life unapologetically and authentically. The Facing Fear world recently got a little bit bigger because a new part of it is in the world, and that's my book, my very first book. It's called Does Carcinoma Mean Cancer? It covers the 4 days between being tested for cancer and finding out that I had it, and the funny things that happened in between. Well, you know, funny, happy, sad, etc. It can be found anywhere on Amazon, and it's a graphic memoir, which means it is 70% art, 30% text, and it's 74 pages long. So it's something you could read in one sitting, revisit multiple times because the art has a lot of dual meanings, and I'm so proud of it. Go check it out on Amazon or facingfearwithsarah.com/book. All right, let's get into this week's episode. My gosh, you know, I've said it once, I'll say it 100 times. It's really hard to hold down a full-time job, go through cancer treatment, have friends, have family, see these people, hang out, have fun, do this podcast that requires a lot of work. But man, oh man, today's guest, whoo, we would have never been connected otherwise. So I am extremely honored to have this person on. So I'm excited to welcome to the Facing Fear podcast, Cam Ayala. Of course, this name may sound familiar as Cam was a contestant on Hannah Brown's season of The Bachelorette and then later Bachelor in Paradise. But that's not what we're here to talk about today. Cam is 33 years old from Houston, Texas, and was born with a disease called primary lymphedema, which causes chronic pain and, for him, swelling in his right leg. After 9 bouts of serious infection, 16 surgical interventions, Cam underwent an above-the-knee amputation in June of 2022. Cam and I connected because someone shared with me an episode he was on of this podcast called Maybe God. So I followed Cam, and then he responded to one of my Instagram stories, which I was like, whoa, wow, somebody's actually watching and paying attention of that, you know, social stature, so we'll say. And then we just went back and forth and connected about lymphedema because I am at risk for that, as most breast cancer patients are, because I had 26 lymph nodes removed from my right arm. So we connected about that. Cam started sharing all of his expertise and experience, and I just became infatuated very quickly with his incredible story. And I thought, you know what? Feel the fear and do it anyways. Asked him to be on the show, in which he responded with a photo of a tattoo that he has that has to do with fear. So instantly, he is Facing Fear family. In this episode, we talk about his background, the ups and downs of being on ABC's The Bachelorette and Bachelor in Paradise, what was missing from his experience on those interesting shows, and of course, all about his medical experiences for the better, for the worse, and everything in between. So thankful he came on the show and extremely excited to share this with all of you today. So let's get started. Okay, awesome. Well, nice to officially meet you. Not to be that person, but I do have to say thank you for responding to my DM, which then led to an actual conversation and voice memos. I feel like we all have this weird perception of social media that sometimes people who have a lot of followers aren't actually people, and they are. So thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you're a person just like I am. And I think especially this past 2 years is where I, you know, initially when I would get just like random DMs, it was really difficult to discern of, okay, who is a legitimate person who wants to have a real conversation versus somebody who is just trying to piggyback off of my following, or if they have kind of a hidden agenda. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I've been burnt a couple of times, unfortunately, mm-hmm. but definitely learning experiences. But I could just tell just from glancing at your page after you sent me the DM within like less than 2 minutes, I'm like, okay, Sarah seems like a real one. So let's let's go.
So I have to tell you how I came across you, yeah. other than the obvious, which we'll kind of talk about later. But I have, okay, so she's my friend, but also she is my sister's mother-in-law. Her name is Dawn. And after we hang up, actually, I'll text you her episode because it was way back in the day. She was a part of my season two. But Dawn is just an amazing person, and we've become close, and now we're officially family as my sister and her husband got married this past summer. Dawn is a paraplegic, so she's been in a wheelchair for quite a few years now, okay. and is someone who took that incident that happened to her and just decided, I'm going to do the best I can with this. She had a one-year-old and a three-year-old at the time that this happened to her, and was like, I'm just going to learn as much as I can and go out there and do whatever I can. So when she's on Instagram, which is very rare, but there are videos of her doing pull-ups at a CrossFit gym, and she plays tennis, and her guns are just obvious from 10 feet away. So Dawn is actually the one who showed me your episode on Maybe God. So I gotta give it up to Dawn for this connection.
Awesome. Yeah, I know that's great, because like I guess I would say most passionate about those conversations that I have with my pastor, Eric, who's the one who runs the Maybe God podcast. Those are ones where, yeah, we talk a little bit about the bachelor stuff just to kind of get it out of the way, but we really focus on, okay, Cam as an individual, Cam as a Christian, and let's talk about the real trials and tribulations of physical and spiritual pain and how we use God in those seasons to glorify him and to really bring out the best in otherwise crummy situations. So that's awesome that Dawn not only heard that episode, but it was the conduit for you and I connecting. So that's awesome.
Yeah, no, so cool. So I can't wait to tell her later today, like, guess who I talked to today?
Nice.
And see, this is the beautiful thing about social media, right? Which I've experienced a lot with breast cancer and just social media in general, but there's these different communities, sometimes good, sometimes bad, but this is definitely one of those beautiful moments. So I appreciate it. But let's go ahead and jump right in. I always have my guests introduce themselves because honestly, just like you're saying, I would love for you to tell us who Cam is in your own words, rather than me read off something from Google. So go ahead, Cam, tell us who you are.
All right. So my name is Cam, short for Cameron. People call me Cameron, especially my family when I'm in trouble. So at any point in this conversation, there's anything offensive or you're just a little heated, you can call me Cameron and that will snap me back into place. But I am 33 years young, soon to be 34 next week. And I live here in Houston, Texas. Some people would know me just from some of the appearances on reality TV, The Bachelorette and Bachelor in Paradise, but I would hope that people see me as a friend, as an approachable Christian, and someone who is really an advocate for people with lymphedema, which is the disease I have, but then also now the amputee community or any other limb differences or people with physical disabilities. That's where my passion's at.
I love it. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And that's how we connected, because I'll be honest, I do watch most of the Bachelor, Bachelorette, Bachelorette in Paradise series purely for entertainment. But having that interview and listening to you on the Maybe God podcast blew my mind. So can we go back to the beginning? We connected because of lymphedema. So Cam is going to tell us a little bit more about it. I will tell you guys, since you know me as your host, about my connection to lymphedema. I had a bilateral mastectomy and they took 26 lymph nodes from my right armpit area. So now I am at risk for lymphedemia.
Uh-huh.
Lymphedemia?
Lymphedema, yeah.
Lymphedema.
People always add the extra syllable to it, like there's an I, like demia. I'm like, no, it's just lymphedema. Yeah. But yeah.
Lymphedema.
Yeah.
Thank you. As you can see, upon the other things I'm handling in the cancer world, this is another vocabulary word I need to learn. work on, but it's a small risk for me, but it is a risk. But that's what drew me to Cam. Obviously your interview was amazing and I'm going to link that in the show notes. So you guys please go listen to his interview on Maybe God, but that was our connection. And we kind of started talking about that. So Cam, you have a totally different experience with this. So you were born with it, right? So can you kind of tell us about that and a little bit about your childhood growing up with this thing that's not really talked about that much? I never really heard of it or talked about it until it was introduced to me through my cancer diagnosis.
Sure, sure. So just to kind of paint the picture for everyone who has never heard of lymphedema, there's actually two types, primary and secondary. Primary being the congenital hereditary side, which I was born with. And then there's secondary, which is secondary to some sort of trauma. It can be cancer treatment, chemo, radiation.
Okay, yeah, so I'd be secondary, right?
You would totally be secondary.
Okay, cool.
So that's secondary to chemo, radiation, obviously surgical intervention like mastectomies or having those lymph nodes removed. And then really any other kind of trauma, right? You can get into an automobile accident or any type of orthopedic surgery. A lot of women get it post-pregnancy because our lymphatic system is literally from the tips of our toes to the top of our head. It's throughout our entire body. Everybody has a lymphatic system. When that lymphatic system is compromised, either through it being genetic compromisation like me or through some sort of trauma like you've had, Sarah, that puts you at risk for having lymphedema. So I don't have a family history of lymphedema, but there are genetic markers to where when I was in the embryonic phase, so like 7 weeks old, and then ultimately my puberty years, so age 11 and 12, when my body was going through a lot of hormonal changes, there was an underdevelopment of my lymphatic system. So basically I started to swell pretty profusely in my right leg primarily. And most people who have lymphedema, it is concentrated to an extremity. But people can have it in their head and neck. You can literally have it anywhere on your body, genitalia. And I'm sure if anyone has Googled lymphedema or if they do after this episode, what they will see is a lot of horrific images, right, of people in underdeveloped countries or even in the United States where they have had elephantitis.
Extreme cases. Yep,
exactly.
Yeah.
Like these really, really large extremities. And if you've seen the show My 600-Pound Life, before Dr. Nal Zardin, who's here in Houston, I actually used to call on him when I worked for a lymphedema pump company about a year ago. I would venture to say over 90% of his patients have lymphedema because obesity can be a contribution to it. Because if you have such a large body mass, your lymphatic vessels can't move that fluid properly. So it's like poor circulation. So that fluid goes downstream as opposed to the upstream the way that it's supposed to. So long and short of it, the lymphatic system in general is very complicated, but to put it simply, if you have primary lymphedema, you were born with it, and you have a lot of similar symptoms to someone who has secondary lymphedema due to some sort of trauma or cancer treatment. But to give you just one quick statistic that will probably hit at home with you, Sarah, so now it's estimated that over 36% of breast cancer survivors will develop secondary lymphedema. But much like all forms of cancer, early detection is key, right? Because there are stages of lymphedema, like stage zero, where you're basically asymptomatic, up to stage three or four, depending upon what staging system you use, which that becomes irreversible. And unfortunately, there's no cure for lymphedema, right? There's just different treatment protocols that can help you manage it, whether you're using compression garments or bandaging and wrapping it, or you use a lymphedema pump, or there are some surgical interventions that can show drastic improvement, but not a clinical cure for the disease. So, and we can go more into it as you have more questions about it, but I just kind of wanted to level set the playing field for everyone who's never heard of it or wants to associate in some capacity.
Yes, and thank you, because truthfully, I was never a kid who was into science. I just kind of skated through those classes in high school. And then my degrees are in communications and all of
Same.
That. So, yeah. And so now you and I basically have a secondary science degree with what we've been through. Yep. But I never gave a shit about my lymphatic system until they told me all this. And then, you know, I'm listening to all these side effects of everything, right? And then they say irreversible. And I was like, huh, what? Wait, what was that? Irreversible? Like, that's so scary. So my sister is a nurse, and I was asking her more questions about the lymph node system and how important it is. So it was cool to learn from her. And then I also remember when I had chemotherapy, there was one that I was allergic to, and I became allergic and had a severe reaction within minutes. And I remember my sister telling me, she was like, yeah, your blood vessel system, that'll get down to your toes in a matter of seconds. And it's the same thing with our lymph system. It's this huge system in our body that you said head to toe. So it's very important. So this is really interesting to learn more. And I thank you for painting that picture for me and for the audience.
Yeah. And just kind of the common association a lot of people have in like a direct but indirect way about the lymphatic system is like oftentimes when you have strep throat or sore throat, you know, your general practitioner will say, hey, let's feel your lymph nodes in your neck. Right. So I've always heard the term lymph node, but before lymphedema was obviously hitting at home and personal, I mean, I never heard about the lymphatic system. And it's crazy that we have this entire system, but there's just so little information, relatively speaking, about it. And the big reason behind that is that in the United States alone, when a medical student is going through their 4 years of medical school, in that 4 year duration, they covered the entire lymphatic system in that curriculum for about 30 minutes. Minutes, right? So if you're a medical school student and you happen to doze off in that lecture, or you skim over a part of the chapter, like you're literally missing an entire system. So then when you go to your residency and you start actually seeing patients, it can become very difficult to diagnose and then offer up treatment options if it's something that you didn't really get a whole lot of education on. So that's why I give a lot of doctors grace when they see me and they hear me talk about my lymphedema and their eyes kind of glaze over a little bit. I'm like, hey, let me teach you something and you still charge my insurance and I have to pay for this visit. But, you know, consider this my freebie to you. But that's why it's really, it's really important that regardless if you have lymphedema or cancer or whatever pre-existing conditions, that you become your own advocate, because no one is going to fight harder for you than you. And that's why it's so important to equip yourself with as much knowledge as possible.
Absolutely. Amen. Retweet to all of that. So you said that this first started really appearing in your life and kind of causing some hardships when you were like early teenage years.
Yeah, 11.
So kind of tell us about that and then kind of your journey through high school and like younger adulthood.
Yeah. Being a three-sport athlete growing up, I played baseball, basketball, and football. That was really how I rooted my identity, is how well you are at sports, right? Like it's crazy at that age. Like, I don't know how it is in other states, but specifically in Texas, like especially with football, your social positioning with your peers is oftentimes dependent upon how good you were at sports. Like if you were the quarterback of the team, or if you were a high scoring basketball player, like you automatically were the popular kid in most cases. So I always put a high emphasis on my athletic performance, because that then led to work ethic and to leadership and to friends and the other social associations with that. So when I was age 11, that was fifth grade going into the sixth grade year. It was summertime and I had about an inch and a half leg length discrepancy. My right leg was shorter than my left leg. And so when we went to just a regular orthopedic doctor, just to kind of get some x-rays, just to make sure there was nothing going on with like the growth plates or anything, because at that point, 11 or 12 for most young guys and girls, that's where you start to hit those growth spurts, and puberty is just running rampant. And, you know, you get the acne and the voice changing and all the other weird stuff that's just awkward. And so when the doctor did that initial x-ray, he thought I had bone cancer because he saw some random black spots on that right leg. And so I know you're already going through your cancer battle, but just imagine being an 11-year-old and being told that, you know, you may have the C word. So
seriously, thank you. The C word. Yeah.
Yeah. They had to do emergency bone biopsy to basically, you know, run the tests and see what it was. And it turned out that it was not cancerous, but because of the invasiveness of that biopsy surgery, that's when 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks post-operatively, as I was starting physical therapy, my right leg just literally was like a balloon and just started to just progressively swell, which that was not normal. I mean, you're going to have post-op swelling, but for like maybe a week or two, and you ice it, elevate it, all that stuff they tell you to do. But when the swelling gets really bad to where you can barely put any weight on the leg and it just got worse and worse, that's when my parents like, okay, it's something else is going on here. Which then led to basically a full year, year and a half of just going to different specialty doctor after doctor. And this is in Houston where I live, which as you know.
Oh, hold on. It just went mute.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, there we go.
Okay, so Houston is home to MD Anderson, the largest cancer center in the world, and Texas Medical
USA.
Yeah, the Texas Medical Center, which is basically on the outskirts of downtown Houston, is the largest medical center in the world too. So it's not like I'm living in some small backwoods town where there's like two doctors who will just say, you know, eat an apple and put some, you know, vinegar on it and it's fine, you know. So it was seeing the top specialists, and the fact that it took me over a year and having accessibility to these top doctors, it took me a year to finally get the diagnosis of primary lymphedema, which then led me down the path of treatment, which still hasn't changed much to this day. They had to do extensive bandaging of my right leg, which was very hot because Houston is super humid.
Oh like my God, I'm sure.
98% of the time. And then they give you these really thick compression garments to wear all the time. And then there's nighttime garments. And then there's the pump that you have to use. And then there's the lymphedema therapist who you have to see who does the special massage, which as an 11-year-old boy, like, yeah, I know we're hormonal, but I didn't want this like random lady like rubbing up on my groin at that age. Yeah, so it's very, very awkward. But I was able to manage it pretty well. And really at that point, I was told by all the doctors and really a lot of my like junior high coaches that I would never be able to play basketball at a high level because this disease was inevitably going to get worse and that there was nothing I could do about it other than to just manage it the best that I could. So that was really where I became stubborn, but in a good way. It was really the stubbornness to prove the medical community and all those coaches wrong. So I really developed a strong work ethic and a strong self-care routine that I had to, because it was either control lymphedema or lymphedema is going to control you. So that's, I guess, one of the advantages of being diagnosed at a young age, because it became my normal of combating this disease versus like, if I was diagnosed in college when I was just a frat boy partying up, like it definitely would have been a priority and I wouldn't have managed it as well as I did by establishing those healthy habits early on.
That's so interesting because I think about, I was diagnosed in October of 2021 and I turned 30 in August of 2021. And I think all the time that, because I know plenty of people younger than me with breast cancer. So yes, I am on the younger end, but there's a lot younger. And I think all the time, thank goodness I was the age I was, the maturity I was. I learned all these things in my 20s and I was able to, quote, handle this as we all do in our own ways for the better, for the worse. But I really love that perspective that you said, having it as a kid, it taught me to grow up early and advocate for myself. That's carried on through your life. So that's a really great positive perspective to have, because we know there's silver linings everywhere, but sometimes they can be really hard to see.
Yeah. So, it was like a rusty silver lining because
right.
I had already, you know, as we were talking about earlier, had established kind of a reputation among my peers of being the outgoing, funny guy who never wanted anyone to pity him, who really prided himself on athletic performance. So for me to maintain that along with having this disease that is progressive, like that took a lot of extra willpower in me to maintain that. And it definitely carried through into my teenage years where I was really ultra competitive in basketball. I focused it to just basketball and was the first NCAA player to play basketball with lymphedema.
Shut up. That's amazing.
Yeah, it wasn't a long career. I played at a school in Northern Texas for just my freshman year. And just the physical demands in the game were pretty intense. So I was like, okay, I checked that box on my bucket list. Let's go now to a quote unquote real college. So I then transferred to Texas A&M, which is a huge school, and got that true large college experience, you know, the football games, the Greek life, and, you know, graduating from a school that has a huge alumni pool that set me up for success in the professional space.
Okay. So I had a very similar kind of high school and college experience. I also played D1 NCAA for 1 year, also decided that shit was not for me.
Yeah.
So talking about managing your, I grew up the same way. And I'm from Indianapolis and you're from Texas. So I totally get what you're saying about that Texas culture and stereotype of athleticism, but it was just kind of in our area and in my family too, which I'm very thankful for. But being an athlete, yeah, it was everything in my little small town. And so I was a one sport athlete. I just played soccer, but I played it year round. And my asthma got really out of control in high school. And I remember, I think it was my senior year, I would literally come into the building during halftime, plug in my breathing machine and do a breathing machine during halftime and go back out there. And I had the same attitude as you. It was just like, you know what? Fine. Like, this is just what it's going to have to be if I want to keep going. And, you know, you're not going to complain about it because every other kid out there doesn't have this problem. So I'm not going to show that weakness. But yeah, I've been through some shit like that where you just patch it up, you know, whether it was wrapping it up or for me taking a breathing machine, and you just keep moving. And then my senior year, my last game of my club career in the spring, I tore my ACL. So that was a lot of fun.
Been there,
yeah.
Done that.
Oh my gosh, you've torn your ACL too?
MCL, meniscus, torn it all. And now
I don't even
have an ACL because I don't have a leg.
Yes, got rid of that.
Yeah.
What a waste of surgery money.
Right.
Just kidding. Yeah, so, you know, I overcame that too. And that when I came into college, I did a ton of physical therapy, played for 1 year and decided it wasn't for me. Luckily, I went to the school I was going to go to no matter soccer was there or not. It was just the dream to combine the two. But then I discovered not for me either.
Yeah.
So after you let go of athleticism and you're still managing lymphedema, because unlike, you know, my asthma, as I ate better, it got more controlled. As I learned what I could and couldn't manage endurance-wise, I was able to kind of manage my life better. And lymphedema just kind of stayed the same for you, right? So how was that experience in college?
Yeah. When I stopped playing collegiate basketball, I still like competed in intramurals when I was at A&M. So I was still staying active, and I didn't want to just like completely let my body go because, you know, I wanted to have girlfriends and be, you know, physically attractive. So I still ate relatively well, but I mean, at the same time, I was also crushing Keystone Light cheap beer on the weekends with my fraternity brothers. So there was a lot of like balance, but not so much. But really, when my health took a turn for the worse was my second year after graduating from Texas A&M. So I was about 23, 24, full-time working professionally. And I had moved to Austin, Texas. And it was one evening after taking a client out to happy hour, I was getting out of my truck and my right leg just like locked up on me. And it wasn't like the type of injury that, I mean, you've torn your ACL, so have I. So like, it wasn't that type of acute injury where I just felt like I stepped on it wrong. It just like locked up. And then all of a sudden my whole body was just flushed with fever. And I was just in this indescribable pain that I'd never felt before. So like immediately I told my roommate at the time and said, bro, like I need to go to the ER. I think I have a blood clot or something. Like something was up. And long story short, I ended up having a pretty major infection in the knee joint, which made them do emergency surgery. They had to open up the knee, drain it. And then for 8 weeks, I had a PICC line IV in my arm. So really heavy antibiotics. And then having to learn to walk again in physical therapy. So that was episode number one. And basically that happened 9 other times in the course of 6 years. So
if
gosh. And there really wasn't any, I guess, consensus or promising future that any of these specialty doctors were giving me. Cause I even moved to Los Angeles for work for a couple of those years. So I was at Cedars-Sinai Hospital. I went to the Mayo Clinic, the Cleveland Clinic, the medical center here in Houston. And after seeing all these specialists, I really didn't get any consensus of the diagnoses other than you have this chronic infection called osteomyelitis, which just means chronic infection of the bone. And they were basically saying, you know, we can put you on amoxicillin, the antibiotic, orally for the rest of your life. And I'm like,
good Lord,
what is that going to do to my gut health and
yeah.
my overall immune system? So after enduring 15 surgeries on that right leg, we thought the best next step would be to do a total knee replacement, which we did last year as kind of like the last ditch effort to save the leg, because our logic was, okay, if it's the knee joint that keeps getting infected,
let's just get rid of it.
Let's just get rid of the knee joint.
Oh my gosh.
That surgery was very rough, because a month into the recovery, I actually did develop a blood clot, which that was the absolute worst pain in my life when I was recovering at my parents' house. Just one afternoon, just overwhelmed with this pain that I'd never felt before, like even worse than those infection episodes. And I mean, I was like literally screaming bloody murder. And like a little fun side story, when the paramedics came to my parents' house to basically transport me to the emergency room, they couldn't get the stretcher into my parents' master bedroom because they had a pretty narrow hallway leading to it. So they had these four like kind of burly paramedic guys that got this like sheet to like roll me over on and like carry me through so that I could then get on the stretcher. But when the first paramedic went to lift up my leg that just had the knee replacement, it hurt so bad, that slight movement, I just like screamed the F word super loud, and it scared him. So then he dropped my leg. And then one of the stitches bursted open. So it literally was like squirting blood. I'm freaking out. Like I literally at that point wanted to be dead. And the only female paramedic who was there came over to me, and she had a syringe. She goes, "Mr. Ayala, I'm about to administer a ketamine shot." And I'd never heard about ketamine at all, but she basically said, "This is a very strong sedative. You're likely going to have an out-of-body experience. Don't worry, you're fine." So at that point, I'm like, okay,
Holy shit. She
injects it. And within like 4 seconds in real time, I felt like what you see in those movies where someone's soul like literally leaves their body. Because as that happened, the guys were lifting me up in the little sheet to put me on the stretcher. And I literally looked down and could see my body. And it was one of those things like, okay, this is it. This is me dying. And like, I actually had a very beautiful moment in that situation where,
oh my God, I need my inhaler right now.
Yeah. I literally felt and saw the face of Jesus reach down and grab my arm and like pull me out. And in that moment, like I knew I was going to be okay. I knew that all of my doubts that I had about my faith and my relationship with Jesus were affirmed in a positive way, that he is real. He has always been there with me. And in this worst moment of my entire life, I had this overwhelming sense of peace and comfort being in his arms. And then from there, the rest of the ride to the hospital, I was just holding the hand of that one female paramedic. Her name is Megan. I just kept saying, "Megan, I love you. Megan, I love you."
Leave it to the women to fix the problems.
Yeah. Some women in ketamine go a long way. But
that is a crazy side story. Holy cow.
Yeah. But long story shorter, unfortunately, the knee replacement was basically botched. The surgeon put in the wrong sized hardware and had it positioned wrong. So for basically a full year, I was busting my tail in physical therapy and doing everything I could to be a compliant patient, but I could only get my right knee to bend about 45 degrees, where to have a full jog or walk, you need at least 110, 120 degrees. So
yeah.
The leg wasn't serving me anymore. So at that point, I had to make the very difficult decision to do an amputation, above the knee amputation.
Wow. Okay. So that's what led us all the way there. Oh my goodness. Okay. Thank you for sharing that whole thing, because wow. And actually, you know what? We're going to take a breather right here, because I did not know this, but Zoom no longer lets you do an hour with two people. I just got an alert that said, "Hey, you have 7 minutes left unless you want to upgrade Zoom."
Part two coming soon.
Oh, we're back. Can you hear me? Perfect. Okay, thank you. I am so disappointed to find that out about Zoom. I knew that that happened when you had like four people or more than two, but now they're doing it down to two. That is extremely rude, when you know they made like $7 zillion in 2020 and 2021. So let's actually reverse a little bit, because that's what led up to your amputation. So let's go back. You went through some really hard times in that late 20s era, and then eventually you ended up on The Bachelorette on Hannah Brown's season. So how does that happen?
I guess basically I would say God has a really good sense of humor.
Amen.
It is so bizarre how that journey came to be. But basically, before I was on The Bachelorette, I had a pretty serious relationship with a girl who was from Canada. And when we were living together, our lease was about to end and her student visa was about to expire. And instead of seeking the consult from an immigration attorney, she was just kind of a little bit naive and was listening to some of her other Canadian peers who had one other approach. So when she basically went back to Canada to renew her visa to come back to Austin, where we were living at the time, got denied. And so basically she got deported. And so we had a weird situation of, okay, do we want to get married so she can legally stay in the U.S.? Or do we try to do long distance, or do we just break up? And we had only been, we had been dating for about 9 months. So not a whole lot of time, but I'm kind of like all in type. So I was willing and in the headspace of wanting to go towards an engagement and marriage, but it would have to be like microwaved and, you know, very much expedited. And she
microwaved.
Yeah, she wanted the big fairy tale wedding and all that, which I understood. But I told her, I said, look, this is just a temporary thing so you can stay here. You know, we'll go to the courthouse, get it on paper so you can legally stay. And then, you know, once you get your green card, which takes about a year, then you can resume work and then we can do the big fairy tale wedding. But long story short, just wasn't what she was wanting. And so we decided to part ways. And then 3 months later, I had met a producer who worked on another show, but had connections to the Bachelor franchise. And she basically said, hey, look, I think you'd be great for The Bachelorette. I didn't really want to do it initially, but she was very convincing after a couple of tequila shots. And so I said yes. And then the next day I get a call from an LA area code. And then a week later I'm flying out to Los Angeles for the finals casting. And so that was how I was coping with my breakup, by going and sharing a girlfriend with 30 other dudes.
Yeah, that's really extreme. Really extreme.
Yeah.
So, and this was pre the major incident you just told me about, right?
Yeah, that was in 2019 that happened.
Okay.
So, and kind of where it all is connected together. So when I was on The Bachelorette, about 2 weeks into the journey, I didn't really get a whole lot of one-on-one time with Hannah, just because at that point, it's still relatively early on. They have all the group dates and I only was on one group date. I hadn't had a one-on-one date. The only thing that I had kind of going for me is I got the first rose, but that thing ends very quickly in terms of that momentum, because it was just basically her first impression. She saw me at the live taping when she was announced. I did a little stupid rap for
her.
Gave me the rose, and then that was like instantly a huge target on my back with all the other guys. So basically when I decided to tell Hannah about my lymphedema journey, I was wanting to tell her that not to get pity or sympathy, but just to like be really real and transparent with her. Because when you have a chronic disease or a sickness, there are times or seasons in your life where you need your family or your friends or your significant other to be that caretaker for you. And I think men can be very, well, people in general are prideful, but men can be especially prideful when it comes to receiving care. So I just wanted to be transparent with her because I had had past relationships where when I was going through one of those infections, for example, and I couldn't go out to the bars and I couldn't do the long hikes and the fun vacations because I was learning how to walk again, that was too much for girls I was dating at that time. So I wanted to just see how she would respond to it, because I didn't want to waste any more of her time or my time in that whole journey. If let's say we make it to hometown dates and then I'm pulling her aside, oh, by the way, I have this chronic disease that there's no cure for. I may lose my leg, you know, you still want to pick me over Tyler Cameron, but you know, she responded very well initially, but the problem was, and I feel like I've said the story so many times, but basically Mike Johnson told her that I was making up this medical sob story to get a pity rose. And so
because they never aired any of that.
The producers, like, they had part of my conversation with Hannah.
But not the word lymphedema, right?
Not the word lymphedema. Mm-hmm. That was edited out.
I said it again.
I know. It's okay. We'll get it by the end of this interview. Lymphedema. Okay. But they edited out me talking about my lymphedema. And the only part of my medical history that was included was when I talked about how I almost had to get an amputation a couple years prior. But the way that they were like chronologically editing it, it sounded like I was just coming up with this discombobulated, like last chance Hail Mary type of story. So she would feel sorry for me to perpetuate what Mike was saying about me and to basically make it look like I was being manipulative. Unfortunately, she did believe him, and I got sent home that night. And that's where the depression really kicked in, because that was the first time in my life where someone made me feel guilty for having a disease that I had done a pretty good job managing and never was public about it. Like, my close friends and family obviously knew about it, but if you looked at any of my past social media posts prior to the Bachelorette, I had nothing about my lymphedema. You didn't even see me wearing my garments, because I wasn't an ambassador. I wasn't an advocate. I sure as hell did not want any spotlight for having a disease. I wasn't ready for that. And I didn't want that.
Not to compare our stuff, right? But you know that the breast cancer ribbon is pink. And you know when you see it, you know what that is. And it's out there. I don't think there is not a ribbon for lymphedema, right?
There is. It's a blue ribbon.
Oh, it's blue. Okay, my second favorite color. But again, like, it's just not out there. So it's harder to join those communities and wear that badge of honor. So I totally get that. And then, you know, you're a hotshot in your 20s trying to work full time, live in LA, move back home, all these things you were doing. It just wasn't your brand, you know? So I totally get that. And I get the seriousness of why you would want to bring it up with a potential future spouse, because, oh my gosh, if I could have given Jacob a warning about breast cancer, that would have been really nice. So I totally see what you were trying to do. Yeah.
You kind of, in a way, want to give someone an out.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You're either wanting to give them an out, or you're wanting to be completely vulnerable and transparent, or you're looking for a way to like strengthen the bond because you can get through that together. Because, you know, I even told Hannah, I believe in the sanctity of wedding vows, especially when we say in sickness and in health.
Yeah.
Because you may be in love with 30-year-old Cam at the time, but guess what? 40, 50, 70-year-old Cam, or Lord willing older, is going to be physically a different person. Hopefully, like, you know, emotionally and spiritually stronger as well. But I had to do that. And the way the network treated it was just completely inappropriate and disrespectful. But that's where I really found God's purpose for me, which is when I came across LEARN, which is the nonprofit I work for now, Lymphatic Education Research Network. Got in touch with Kathy Bates, who's our national spokesperson, and has become a really good friend of mine now. And so it was like, all right, let's forge this path forward. Let's take a negative, make it positive, and let's be one of the faces of a disease that affects over 10 million Americans alone. So that's been my mission, my purpose, my passion, and now my profession ever since. And it's really a 24-hour job, just in the sense that, like, yeah, I have the tasks that I do for LEARN specifically, but I'm getting countless direct messages on social media from lymphedema patients.
I'm just going to say, what you're doing right now is, you know.
Yeah, it never stops. But I mean, it's such a blessing. And there's, you know, a Bible verse, the exact words are escaping me at the moment, but something along the lines, to much is given, much is expected. So when God gives you a platform, gives us extroverted personalities, speaking abilities, you know, we have a calling to shed the light to other people who are otherwise living in a world of darkness, who are isolating, who are uneducated, who are feeling helpless and hopeless. That's my calling. And not just with the lymphedema community, but now the amputee community that I just joined about 2.5 months ago. So it's a lot of different things, a lot of different hats, and a lot of different now legs that I get to wear. So it's a blessing. It really is. But there's hard days for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And that same thing has happened to me. you know, I remember at the beginning, my mom was like, are you sure you want to share this on social media? Like, are you sure you really want to get into it? And then I was like, yeah, I do. I do. I just am very authentic on my social media, so I can't really hide much. And then when I started sharing more details and then going through IVF, which is really personal, and all these, I mean, breast cancer is so, so personal. But she was like, are you sure you want to keep going into those details? And I'm like, Mom, I'm comfortable and this is my thing. But I totally agree with you. When you get something like this, it is almost a wink from God to keep talking about it or sharing your experiences. One, because it is helpful to me to offload this stuff. Two, yep. It's helping people see a reality of something that they may have never touched, like cancer. And three, it is helping other people out there. And I mean, I'm over here with like 2,000 followers. You obviously have many, many more. But I have received such amazing positive reinforcement and words of affirmation from people I do know, many people I don't know. You just never know who's watching. So if you're going to put something out there like you and I are, that is very hard. It's really great to be honest about it. And I mean, you're obviously educational about it as well. I'm definitely a little less. I'm just kind of trying to get through my shit right now. Yeah, it really does help. And I hope it helps you too in kind of digesting everything by sharing.
Yeah. And I mean, even the past 2 weeks, I had kind of an epiphany that my pastor, Eric, who you heard in the Maybe God podcast. So we're in the process of filming a documentary about my whole journey with the amputation. And we started filming it several months ago. So before I had the surgery, literally the day of surgery, day after, and had been following me on the recovery ever since. And we had just kind of a little spoiler alert here. We had a check-in conversation between Eric and I about 2 weeks ago. And, you know, we really got to the bare bones of my identity should not be rooted in digital influencer cam, because like if tomorrow there was a technological shutdown and there was no social media, who is Cam Ayala? Mm-hmm. He can't be depending on the affirmations from others. And when we talk about like discipleship, for example, you know, you mentioned earlier, like, oh, you know, you have a couple thousand followers and I have much more than that. But like, to me, it's all about quality over quantity. Like I could have millions of followers like some of my other castmates, but I would much rather have 10 or 5 people that I form a genuine connection with and impact their life, because that's way more impactful than some of the surface level selling FabFitFun boxes or whatever else, you know, consumerism things are out there. Because like my parents are very similar to yours in the sense that like, are you sure, Cam, you want to put your personal life out there? And it's because there's some generational differences. They didn't have social media, and their generation told them that strength is keeping everything inside. Be composed when you're out in public, right? Don't be vulnerable. Don't wear your heart on your sleeves. Whereas like us, you know, we're showing the good, the bad, the ugly, because that is where you can make true self-transformation, but also help other people who are going through the same things as you are. So, you know, I encourage you to keep it up. And I know your journey is not over per se. And if you do actually establish lymphedema, just know that you have me, you have a large support system there, and it's something that you can beat and it won't control you, because you're young, you're strong, you're beautiful, all the above, all those tangible attributes will make you a successful patient. Because for a lot of cancer patients, you win the cancer battle, but then now you have the lymphedema war. And I call it a war because it's never ending.
Yeah.
So you just have to take that stride, one stride at a time, and know again that you're not alone, not only from God looking after us, but again, you know, brothers and sisters like me who are here for you.
Yeah. Thank you so, so much. And that is so true, because that word was in the many things that you go through with cancer, it's pretty small. So it's definitely something to be aware of. And luckily, like I've been informed of what to watch out for or when to wear my sleeve and when not to. But I have other friends too who have been like, oh, I've had this experience. So take them seriously when they talk about that. So, and then just this conversation with you alone and what I learn and following from you, it's a serious thing. I would like that phrase, what happens if the digital world shuts down tomorrow, who are you, on a tattoo, on a t-shirt, on a banner, on like a plane? Like, I love that question. And to think about who we are, if Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, all this stuff goes out of business, like, who are you going to be? Are you proud of that? Are you going to have the words of affirmation from yourself, from God, from your family? Oh, that's something we should think about like every single day. I love that. I love that challenge. Think about
it. It wrecked me. And I mean, and you'll see the conversation, the documentary once we release it, but that was like one of those aha moments that wasn't planned. It just happened. And it really got to the root of me being open about my depression. The depression for me came from being too codependent on the affirmations in the digital space, which is one of those things that's never going to be fully fulfilling, right? Like, you can get 20 positive confirmations and affirmations from likes and comments and friend requests and those direct messages that can brighten your day. But then you get like one bad one. Like, I made a mistake last night. Someone sent me a Reddit post about me that was mostly positive, but there was two negative comments on there. And that's the reel that I'm replaying in my head, is those negative comments. So we need to just be better as individuals to not be defined by our digital real estate, but to really make those real life connections, which can come by way of social media, but we don't need to be so like dependent on our identity from those platforms, which a lot of people alter. They put the filters, they only show the happy stuff. But I know that you and I, you know, we keep it real and we show the image of the apple that has the bite taken out of it, not the shiny side that people only want to put up on their social media.
Ooh, another good tattoo idea. I'm like, I'm going to make all these images in my office now. I am getting a post-cancer tattoo, but it's not going to be either of those things. That's for later conversation. But I don't want to take too much more of your time. I just looked down and realized we're 5 minutes past already. Do you want to just quickly tell us about where you are present day? You had the amputation. Can you just kind of quickly tell us why and then what's going on now? And then, of course, at the end, I want to plug everything that you have going on.
Sure. So, again, I had to get the amputation because the hardware for my knee replacement was not right. And I did not want to go through a strenuous multiple surgery revision route. I'm relatively young, so doing the amputation now meant that I could get a really good prosthetic and I can make that transition into being an amputee now when I'm single, don't have kids, don't have a wife, so I can really come into my new body and really process that grief and that loss. But now, you know, as I mentioned, we're almost wrapping up the documentary, so that's going to be really therapeutic to get that out, to not just inspire amputees, but really anybody who's gone through any physical pain, trials, tribulations, and how Jesus was there all along. You know, I mentioned in that story, so this is like one of my favorite paintings. You can't really see, it's blurred out because of my blurred background, but it's that image of Jesus like reaching down and pulling you out of the
dark
space.
Oh yeah, I can kind of see that when you did that. Yeah, cool.
So now I'm competing in wheelchair basketball. So it's awesome.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah. So that was really humbling, getting into a sport that I used to play, but now rolling and being much shorter than I once was. And I have this podcast that I'm doing with another fellow amputee, James Dixon. It's called Above and Below. I'm an above knee amputee. He's a below knee, but it's also a head nod to heaven and to heaven and hell. And like our whole tagline is training for eternity, because that's what our time here on earth is just training for the life hereafter. So I'm here for anybody.
Oh my God, I love dual meaning stuff like that. Nailed the branding. Nailed it.
Yeah. So we're really excited to do that. And you know, we don't expect like a huge following, because again, it's all about quality over quantity. And so if any amputees or lymphedema patients or fellow Christians just need some support, you know, I'm pretty much an open book. So send me a DM. I'm happy to give you any encouragement as deemed necessary. And on the final topic of tattoos, I got one. I think I sent you a picture of this.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, it's my little like male amputee logo. And then it has faith over fear. And I think that's the perfect tie-in to your brand, because that's what I truly believe has carried me in my darkest seasons of pain, insecurities, doubt, is having that faith over fear. Because when you have a surplus of faith, your fear decreases. But the inverse is true. When you have a surplus of fear, it's because your faith is low. So, you know, keep the faith, keep the fear low, and keep trucking forward.
Wow. Thank you so much. Mic drop. I couldn't ask for anything more. And when I was DMing and we were getting to know each other, I was like, ah, screw it. I'm just going to ask him if he wants to be on the podcast. And then you sent me that tattoo back. I was like, okay, universe, God, yeah. Thank you for aligning us. This is meant to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Cam. And I will link all his social media, the Above and Below podcast. I'm going to also link the episode for Maybe God that Cam was on. His name is Eric, right?
Yeah, Eric Huffman. He's awesome.
He really tells the backstory, and he pulled in all these clips from The Bachelorette. So you really get that full picture that you did not get on TV, people. So I'm going to link all these other things for everybody. Highly encourage you guys to go check it out. Thank you so, so much, Cam. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Sarah. Let's stay in touch.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Facing Fear podcast. I'd love to know what you think, so please leave a review on Apple's podcast app, or you can go to the Facing Fear with Sarah Facebook and leave a review there as well. If you or someone you know has a story of overcoming fear to pursue their own definition of success, please submit yourself or that person as a guest. You can do that at facingfearwithsarah.com. Until next time, I'll see you in the social media world. You can find the show everywhere at Facing Fear with Sarah, or communicate directly by emailing hello@facingfearwithsarah.com. You made it to the end of the episode, so I'm going to give you a little surprise. I was recently published in the Wildfire magazine. It is the first and only publication for and by those who are too young to be affected by breast cancer. And you can go get this issue at a discount. So visit wildfirecommunity.org and use code WILDFIRE15, or even better, use the link in my social media, in the show notes today. And if you use that particular link and the code, you can not only save yourself money, but you can also earn me a little bit of money, as I get a kickback from every purchase used under Sarah's link. So go check it out in the show notes. The issue is themed The New Normal, and this is relatable for anybody who's been through some kind of storm in life and is trying to figure out who they are and who and what and how and why life goes on afterwards. So check it out. Go visit wildfirecommunity.org. Use code WILDFIRE15 to save on your version of a print or digital copy of the latest issue called The New Normal. Thank you so, so much for your support.